Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Jessica Tye, and in for Greg Metzig, it's Adam Roberts.
One more hour to go. We've got another big one. We're talking about MPS. We're talking about lead. We're talking about Menards, J.J. Watt, Hannah Dugan. Jam-packed.
That is a busy hour, Jessica, and we're going to get to all of it.
Right now.
Here's your top two at two on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Number one, Milwaukee Public Schools announcing a major update on the district's lead stabilization work. The district has been working for more than 10 months to eliminate lead dangers from nearly 100 schools across the city of Milwaukee. The superintendent, the mayor, and the city health commissioner were all on hand for this announcement today. All of the targeted MPS school buildings are now clear of lead hazards, and that's ahead of schedule. Dr. Brenda Caselius.
Over the past 9 months, our teams completed lead stabilization work at 99 schools with the elementary grades. We addressed 2,700 classrooms plus associated common areas, impacted approximately 7 million square feet across the district.
What a relief. I mean, to have this, to be able to mark that off your checklist for the district, this is huge.
Yes, Superintendent Caselius, you just heard. Remember when she came in March, she started her job as superintendent early and has said from the beginning, this was the number one issue for her to tackle, was the safety of students in MPS schools, and to see the progress that's been made in about 9 months. In fact, exactly 9 months to the day when she had her first day on the job, March 17th, is pretty remarkable.
And she has a lot of issues to tackle at MPS. By the way, those schools had to be cleared by the Milwaukee Health Department. But a big and very important update from MPS today for the district's kids and the staff.
Number two, some news coming out from the Attorney General of Wisconsin, Josh Call, just a few moments ago. And it concerns a company that most of us here in Southeast Wisconsin and across the state are well aware of. Now, Jessica mentioned Menards was going to be in the news today, and here it is. A $4.25 million multi-state settlement has been reached with several states, including Wisconsin, and the home retail chain based out of Eau Claire, resolving claims, according to Call, that the company deceptively marketed its merchandise credit check program. If that sounds like a lot of words, you probably know this as the Get 11% Off Everything Now at Menards, the 11% Rebate Program. Also included in the settlement are claims that Menards engaged in price gouging during the COVID-19 pandemic. The settlement includes specific instances involving 4-gallon bottles of water. Remember, around the start of the pandemic in March and April, the rush that everyone went on to supplies, sanitizer, toilet paper.
Sanitizer,
that's the one everyone remembers. But specifically in Onalaska and closer to home here in Johnson Creek, there were allegations of price gouging on 4-gallon bottles of purified water at Menards locations. So as part of this settlement, Menards is going to pay out about $4.25 million. Wisconsin will receive about $750,000 of that. This led by multiple states, including us. Menards has not commented on the settlement, but this is a product and a service that even if you only go into Menards maybe once in a blue moon, if you've watched TV in any stretch of time, you've seen at the very end of the Menards ads that 11% rebate notice. And so this is a program that a lot of people have taken advantage of.
Well, and now I feel like it's all coming together for me because it was fairly recently, maybe a month ago or so, I thought my husband and I saw a commercial that said the 11% rebate was going away. And he was like, wait, what? It's going away? And I said, it's going away? Because he's all about that. We get the rebates at home mailed to us. And then I remember, I kind of forgot. I mean, he goes to Menards way more than I do. But I forgot when they started it. So he's like, well, it hasn't always been a thing. Because for me, it feels like it's just been around for so long. But now I feel like, okay, does it have to do with that? But yeah, Call said officials looked into whether the Eau Claire-based company made it clear enough that final prices were after that mail-in rebate for store credit rather than the price at the point of sale, which is really interesting because I knew that it was that. Hmm. Seemed pretty clear to me, but doesn't mean it did to everybody.
So you mentioned before we go to break, Jessica, that you saw that it may be going away. Under the terms of the settlement, one of the practices Menards will have to incorporate is not advertising or representing any program that offers store credit for making purchases at Menards that provides consumers with a point of purchase discount. So that, among other practices, they'll have to take in as part of this settlement reached today.
Sometimes I would laugh. We'd get a mail-in rebate. It'd be like for 88 cents. Mm. I'm like, really, babe? But it does all add up.
I suppose.
It is 2:15. Coming up next, more Americans are staying put. They're not moving out of state. But what about here in Wisconsin? More Americans are staying put. New data suggests fewer people packed up and moved this year, with relocation numbers dipping slightly compared to 2024. Instead of mass migrations to a handful of hot states, most of the country appears to be holding steady, including much of the Midwest. So what's driving this shift, and what's happening here in Wisconsin? ABC's Jim Ryan has been digging into the numbers and joins us now. Happy Wednesday, Jim.
Hey, Jessica. Yeah, it's the same old, same old. It's the economy. It's housing availability. It's housing affordability. Those things are all keeping us where we're sitting. And essentially, people are a little concerned about changing jobs. They're looking at interest rates. They're looking at home prices, home availability, and finding that the best course of action is to simply stay right where they are. I'm always interested in the ways that statisticians and others study these numbers. So if you want to find out what's happening in terms of flu in a community, the overall flu rates, you go to the drugstore and study the number of thermometers that are purchased, or cold and cough medication. And that gives you a pretty good view of what's happening with flu numbers. In this case, Atlas Van Lines puts out statistics on where people are renting trucks, where they're going, and where they're coming from, as a way to kind of gauge the migration patterns around the country, and coming up with a pretty reliable number in terms of migration.
So where does Wisconsin fall in these Atlas Van Line numbers? Gaining people, losing people, staying balanced?
It's balanced, kind of in the middle, along with Minnesota and Illinois and Michigan. That, yeah, right. The upper Midwest is sort of, people are either satisfied with where they are right now. They like their job. They like their home. Or they're too concerned about stepping away from that, finding a job outside, finding homes beyond their own neighborhoods. But, I mean, you go down to Iowa, though, and you see a lot of people who are packing up and moving away. 56% of the Atlas rentals were for people leaving. 44% were people coming into the state. So it's kind of the trend, though. It's all the way across the country. There's this interesting band right across the United States, starting in California, extending all the way east to New Jersey. And within that band, you see this balance, this number of people about equal, those coming in and those going away from any particular state.
Jim, is this, in your analysis of the data, a symptom possibly of a growing gap maybe between the haves and the have-nots? Because moving costs in general have soared over the past 5 years, and
sure,
it seems like those who can afford to move may still do so, while those who can't won't.
Well, I think you're right, and a lot of it has to do with income, but it's also the income potential, the job that you might get in hopes of earning more money enough to provide for your family. But it's interesting to me that the states that maybe aren't considered haves or have-nots but are somewhere in the middle, the state with the most in-migration, that is, the most people moving in according to Atlas Van Lines, is Arkansas. Huh. Of those rentals, 68% were for people coming into Arkansas, 32% moving away. But just south of there, Louisiana, a bordering state, that's where you have the most people moving away. The greatest percentage, 66% renting trucks to get out of there, 34% renting trucks elsewhere to come into Louisiana. So, I mean, it's hard to say, so what are they doing right in Arkansas that they aren't doing in Louisiana? Well, some communities in Arkansas are offering incentives to people to come in and move into their communities. Louisiana doesn't have those same sorts of things, but it's also perception. Arkansas, I think, is seen as a safe place, a lot of lakes, a lot of beautiful countryside, good education. Louisiana, I think the perception there is that it's unsafe and that there aren't a lot of job opportunities.
So this is interesting. I pulled up the numbers to look myself for these Atlas Van Line numbers, and I really like they have this map, this interactive map that shows they looked at trends across 30 years. Jim, you probably took a peek at this. And I was watching as they went through the years and the numbers that they've gathered, and I paid close attention to Wisconsin, and it looks like throughout these 30 years, while we're balanced now, we have either been outbound with people or balanced, never really inbound. And we've heard the Midwest is becoming more attractive again, but it doesn't really look like Wisconsin, at least from these numbers, is benefiting from that shift.
Well, that's true. And maybe it will in the coming years. But yeah, you look back to sort of the trouble in the auto industry, the trouble with manufacturing and that whole part of the country that really relies on that. Saw people moving away and looking for opportunities in California or Texas or Florida. Not a lot of folks coming in. But yeah, you're right. We're seeing the balance now. And as cycles go, it's likely that more people will be moving into places like Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan in the years ahead.
Jim, as I was combing through the numbers from Atlas Van Lines from 2024, I saw an interesting quote from The Atlantic. They had an article that included the quote that a sharp nationwide decline in mobility across the U.S. is the single most important social change of the past half century. Why would this be the case?
Well, it says a lot about the economy. I mean, people vote with their pocketbooks and they also move with their pocketbooks. And so if people are concerned about finding a job, finding affordable housing, they're less inclined to go anywhere. And so I think we're seeing this leveling off in most places, Adam, where people are willing to just stay right where they are because they feel safe. And if not safe, they at least feel that they're not putting themselves at risk by leaving.
The other thing, too, I think about, you think about the housing costs and also hybrid work. There are so many people who don't have to live where they're working these days. And mm-hmm. I feel like that changes the landscape, too.
Yeah, well, and interesting, I was looking at Arkansas and one community, Texarkana, that is offering incentives to people to come in. And they're trying to draw people in who are willing to or able to work remotely to get people to come in. And those tend to be higher income jobs and the kind that obviously you can do from home. So either hybrid or remote work is one thing I think that is a game changer in a lot of places.
The other thing I think of, Jim, you mentioned Arkansas. You know what big company resides in Bentonville, Arkansas? That would be Walmart. Yeah. And some of these bigger companies, to your point about incentives, may have the bigger bandwidth to do so. I think if you're in Wisconsin, we've had a lot of attention from Microsoft, companies like Oracle getting involved with data centers. Maybe as they expand the need for physical labor, that could possibly open up and we could see incentives for certain regions of our part of the state here.
Yeah, you're probably seeing ads on TV or on streaming services from Meta, and they're touting their data centers that are moving into communities and kind of revitalizing them with jobs. There is a downside to that, of course. They're a huge energy draw. They use up a lot of water, a lot of electricity, but they do create jobs. And Meta certainly has been willing to tout that as a way to reinvigorate communities.
One final thing real quick here, Jim. I was thinking about it. We've heard, I don't know, a lot. Maybe that might be a little bit too much, but we've definitely heard about people leaving the U.S. and moving overseas. Did Atlas look at that as far as Americans moving internationally?
It did. And some of the top inbound places, the places where people are coming to the U.S. from, India, France, Canada, and Turkey. Hmm. What about people going out, leaving the United States, moving beyond U.S. borders? Bangladesh, Tanzania, Cambodia, and Mexico.
All right. There you go. Interesting. I'd like to go to Greece for a while. I'll come back. I love Milwaukee, but I'd like to go to Greece and stay for a bit. Thank you so much, Jim. That's ABC's Jim Ryan. We appreciate it.
All right. See you guys.
A big development in the Judge Hannah Dugan case in Milwaukee County. The prosecution just called its final witness to the stand. It's Dugan's court reporter. In fact, the court reporter just testified a couple of minutes ago that when she learned ICE was in the hall, she was pissed off. Remember, Dugan is accused of helping a man who was in the country illegally evade immigration agents at the Milwaukee County Courthouse in April. One big question remains this afternoon. Will Judge Dugan herself take the stand? We discuss that today with CBS Justice correspondent Scott McFarlane.
Well, of course, she has the right not to. We all know that. Whether she does so or not can sometimes be a mid-trial strategy. You know, the defense can get a sense, Jess, of where things are going and whether they need to put somebody on the stand and expose them to unpredictable cross-examination, which can be problematic for any number of reasons. This trial is going a bit longer than I think some people might have expected when they first saw this case surface in May. Such a point-blank case, such a simple allegation here, but they've really tried to support it with a lot of witnesses, and that doesn't mean the jury is being more convinced. Just because you throw a lot of witnesses at something doesn't mean you're making a more compelling case. You'll remember, though, the initial trial date on this case was for mid-July. Now, federal cases don't move that fast, but having this in December is earlier than some of us thought as well, that there might be more pretrial arguments and motions. They've got this thing right there in the hands of a jury now, with the fate of a local judge in their hands.
Well, we don't know yet whether Judge Dugan will take the stand herself. I can tell you what, a lot of people would like to hear her side of the story.
Absolutely. She's naturally been pretty reserved, has made no comments to any of the media that have been outside the federal courthouse downtown at any point that she's gone into the building. Something else we brought up with Scott that I think is very interesting is the timing of this case. You mentioned that things were supposed to happen earlier, then got pushed back, and now here we are in mid-December. You know, what's coming up a week and a day from today is the Christmas holiday. And while it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to hurry things up because you got to let justice play out and the system do its thing, I was wondering if in the back of some of these jurors' mind is that, hey, this day is looming and we certainly wouldn't want things to stretch into mid-next week.
Generally speaking, yes. The holidays are almost like a dead end for juries across America, cases big and small, federal and local. It doesn't give anybody an advantage, but yeah, jurors are humans, and this is not exactly a quiet time of year for most of us. We're pretty darn busy right now, weekends, weekdays, nights, and jurors have lives, and jurors, if they see a declarative way to go in the jury room, may, when they get this case, see the holiday deadline as an urgency to come out with an answer. But you can't predict juries. You can't know what they're going to do, which is always the risk of a trial. It's always the leverage the federal government wields to try to get plea agreements. But this case was never going to be pleaded out. There's a fundamental issue here, a fundamental issue about separation of powers, about the executive branch reaching into the judicial branch, according to Judge Dugan's team. And I don't think this case was ever going to be stopped short of a trial.
It's so true that you can't predict what the jury is thinking. Because think about people. You have some people who I'm sure the holidays are in the back of their minds. Maybe they were planning to host Christmas. You're going to have the whole big family over. That's in the back of their minds, right? And then I bet you have some other people who say, this is my job, this is my duty, and it doesn't matter that Christmas is coming up. I'm putting all that in the back of my mind, and I'm not even thinking about it.
Yeah, it's one of the things that when you're going through jury selection, I know that in this case in particular, Judge Lynn Edelman really hammered in on political beliefs and aspersions, because this is, as we've talked about, going to be a bellwether largely for the dealings with the Justice Department, the Trump administration, and how those two can clash. But to this point, I mean, jurors, you got to be impartial, and that covers not just political beliefs, but also what you may be thinking about what you're doing after the trial. Because once you get that letter that says, hey, you could be on, you got to be ready to be on.
We continued our conversation today with CBS Justice correspondent Scott McFarlane, asking him, what if Judge Dugan is convicted? And then on the flip side, if she's acquitted?
Well, I think you could bet the farm on an appeal. I mean, that's pretty much the muscle memory of federal criminal defense, is look for issues with the jury instructions, look for issues in the trial to compose an appeal. You could guarantee that. If she is convicted, also, it's worth noting this is not a violent crime. This is not a crime of violence. This is not somebody who has a criminal history. It seemed preposterous to think about prison sentences in the sentencing memorandum. Well, that's kind of premature, because this case hasn't gone to the defense yet, nor has it gone to a jury. But we are talking about a federal felony, which is not an insignificant thing.
So the prosecution has now rested. The defense says, this just coming in moments ago, that they will call several witnesses in the morning. And Judd Edelman says there's a good likelihood that closing statements will come tomorrow afternoon. Jury just dismissed until tomorrow morning.
So we will see if Judge Dugan takes the stand, as well as the list of character witnesses that includes some pretty interesting names. Now, not all of them may be used, but some of them will, at least there will, to this point, several witnesses. So how long that list is, we will find out tomorrow.
So the breaking news there, the prosecution has now rested in the Judge Hannah Dugan case. The defense says they will call several witnesses in the morning, and the judge is saying there is a good likelihood closing statements will come tomorrow afternoon. We'll have it all here for you right here on 620 WTMJ. It's 2:45.
So some interesting comments earlier today from a likely first ballot NFL Hall of Famer in a couple of years, a guy who made a lot of waves during his time right here in our state, both in Pewaukee and in Madison for your Wisconsin Badgers. I'm going to take you back to the year 2021. The Green Bay Packers still had quarterback Aaron Rodgers. They had just drafted a young upstart rookie by the name of Jordan Love, and a lot of conversation about making the most of Rodgers' final years to be expected in Green Bay. You couldn't ignore Rodgers' watch for those few years. And a lot of fans of the Packers, you may recall, Jessica, around that time, around 2021, were raising their hands to general manager Brian Gutekunst and saying, hey, there's a free agent available right now who could make a lot of waves in a few years before Rodgers heads off to different pastures.
One connected to our area.
One J.J. Watt. Now, ultimately, the Packers did not make a move for Watt, who was kind of sort of the twilight of his career at that point, had played for a long time with the Texans, had been subject to injury. But interesting comments today from Watt. He was on the Pat McAfee Show, as he is pretty often. He's a CBS NFL analyst now on television and regularly comes onto the show. He shared some thoughts and insight into that period and said he wanted in Green Bay.
I said the ideal situation for me would be to go play for the Green Bay Packers. That's where a man grew up. I watched Reggie White. That would be incredible. I said I'll take a significant hometown discount to play there. And I said, but I just need to know what that looks like so I can at least consider it against all options. And I was not given a number to consider.
So I had to do a little revisionist, to make sure I'm not doing revisionist history, and go back to what the team's official stance was, because I had scratched my head going, didn't we already hear some of this? But no, there was that typical, you know, we've discussed potential interest in all people, as Gutekunst is oft to say. But I didn't find any actual stance where they had said, nope, yeah, we didn't make an offer at all and then moved on. So I know, again, he was definitely in the back end of his career, had been oft injured at that point. At the same time, if he was, as he's saying here, willing to take a pretty big cut, that salary cap argument the Packers used at the time maybe doesn't carry as much weight as it did in the moment.
That's the thing, hearing that he was willing to take the hometown discount. Mm-hmm. Because you could imagine this, like, yeah, I wanted to. You could hear from somebody to say, I wanted to go back home, but, you know, working through the agents and working through the group, it just didn't make sense. It didn't work out. But he's saying, I was willing to take the hometown discount, and they just didn't make the offer. Whoa, that is a big new revelation. When this first came out, I was thinking, have we heard a little bit about this? But I don't think we have.
So Watt, of course, ultimately ended up in Arizona with the Cardinals, played a couple more years, has since retired. And as I mentioned, a lot of people think he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, already in the Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame. The Watts with obviously a pretty big footprint here in Wisconsin. I know there was a lot of conversation when T.J. Watt was around for the Packers to take, and they ultimately passed there as well.
Yeah, it's going to reignite some anger among Packers fans over a painful past decision. A big revelation from J.J. Watt. Hey, speaking of football and some of our big guys there, last night I was actually watching a network that I don't normally have on, and I went to go to click on to the other network, and I thought, wait a second. So I was on NBC. I typically, full disclosure, I typically watch ABC. I kind of grew up watching it and still do. And David Muir, he's my man. So anyways, but when that whole dispute was happening, when ABC was off YouTube television, we have YouTube. So right. I had the recording on for NBC for a while. So we had the recording on. All of a sudden, there was a story like, quarterback Aaron Rodgers is a hero in Pittsburgh. Hmm. And I was like, a hero? I'm like, okay, wait, I want to hear this story. And I thought there'd be something. I actually thought maybe he'd be doing something nice, like working with kids for the holidays. Not really working with them, but he made a big donation or he did something like this. It was nothing like that. And it kind of left me shaking my head a little bit. But I'll let you be the judge on whether Aaron Rodgers is a hero.
Aaron Rodgers' neighborhood?
It is.
In Pittsburgh, there's a new Mr. Rodgers in town, causing jerseys to fly off the shelves.
Rodgers end zone, got his man! Touchdown!
Quarterback Aaron Rodgers wowing Steeler Nation in his primetime performance against the Miami Dolphins.
I feel real comfortable
in this environment. Always been able to throw pretty good in the cold over the years.
His 21-season career, including more than a decade and a half with the Green Bay Packers, a hard-fought stop with the New York Jets marked by injury and losses, and a sometimes polarizing reputation in and out of the spotlight.
Well, I personally never really liked Aaron Rodgers, but I've grown to like him this year.
For years, Steelers fans watched him do this to them. Now he's doing it for them.
What we love about him is his experience. Plus, you know, he's a little tough on some of the players, and we like that.
Yeah. WPXI sports anchor Jenna Harner has covered the Steelers for years.
So, Jenna, the big question, has Aaron Rodgers won over Pittsburgh?
Well, I really think you're starting to see a lot of Steelers fans believe in what Aaron Rodgers and what this team is doing as a whole. And if he can bring them a playoff victory, something they haven't had in nearly a decade, we'll see a lot of happy Steelers fans here in Pittsburgh.
Rodgers really working a hard count tonight.
At 42, some wondered if the superstar quarterback's best days were behind him. But a decisive win in the Steel City, proving a comeback, is always possible.
So here's the thing. Maybe I just have a different definition for hero.
Yeah, I kind of am there with you. But go ahead.
But I will say, though, that the kid, I mean, he wasn't a kid. He's an adult, but he was like a young adult who said, I never really liked Aaron Rodgers, but now he's kind of turned it around. So, hey, good for them. I get it. I mean, I'm Packers all the way, Packers all the way. So I don't care about the Steelers and their terrible towels. However, I do relate to them getting behind Rodgers and having something to cheer about and whatnot. I just, when it was pitches like Aaron Rodgers is a hero, I thought, what is this about?
Yeah, we need to establish, I think, a threshold, especially when it comes to athletes, of what becomes a hero. Now, I will say, it's interesting that the story seems to be framed in the way of, look at the Steel City rallying behind old man Rodgers leading them to their first playoff win in so long. I do happen to recall not too long ago in Steel City at Acrisure during a home game, chance of fire Tomlin, when they were in the midst of their 26-7 loss at home to the Buffalo Bills a few weeks ago. Oh, by the way, another one of Pittsburgh's losses this year would be to your Green Bay Packers in the Love Rodgers matchup earlier this year, 35-25. So I think football fans can be fickle, doesn't matter who you're rooting for. And also, again, to your point, Jessica, maybe we need to be a little bit more cautious of how we use the word hero when it comes to professional athletes.
I would agree. Just a reminder, the breaking news that we brought to you here on Wisconsin's Midday News, the prosecution has rested in the Judge Hannah Dugan case. The defense says they will call several witnesses in the morning. And the judge said it's likely that closing statements will come tomorrow afternoon. The jury has been dismissed. We are dismissed, at least here on the set right now. Have a great afternoon,
rests.
Everybody.